Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. Guys, we're broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Violeta Edelman, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime,
Rob Duncan, Dolcezza, co-founder with Violeta, my wife.
We make gelato in Washington, D.C., and we're here with Alex Goldstein, the Fridge D.C. art director and gallery owner. Thank you so much, Alex, for being here with us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
That sounds better.
Check, check, good. 1, 2.
Well, my friends always told me I have a voice and a face for radio, so
yeah, it sounds is sounding good, man.
You should do it.
Looking good, sounding good, my dear.
Yeah,
there you go.
So, Alex, we go way back, but we haven't seen each other in a long time.
That's how it is sometimes, you know. But you can pick up where you left off or not. So
we met you when we were opening our DuPont location, right?
Yeah, our mutual friend, AJ Wilhelm.
Shout out to AJ. Fuzzy Buddha in the house.
Whom I've known, I think, this is our 20th year of friendship. I first met AJ when he was auditioning for a band called CI, who still exists. Rockers International Thievery Corporation members.
Yeah, they always played over 18th Street Lounge.
They still do. Rockers International does, but this goes way back before that. They got that gig in a recording studio called One World, which was the punk rock studio in D.C. that many, many, many punk albums were recorded in, as well as reggae and dub. And it was in Naylor Court, which is where I lived in the early 2000s. Way before it was trendy. I had a big dog. I still carried a baseball bat at times. Not joking. So it's nice to see how things have changed, and that's one of the things I want to talk about today.
Yeah. Cool. So we did an art exhibit when we opened our third location.
Well, I was going to say, I also began actually by DJing. That's how we first met. I was hired by you all to DJ at the outdoor barbecue at your grand opening.
Oh,
that led
into
us curating work
that
in
was
here.
When
that's
we did
so
the
funny. We did
the
pig roast with Beverly Eco Friendly Foods.
You had 1,000 people in line.
Yeah, and then we gave it all away for the grand. That's so funny.
And so I played music, vinyl records.
I totally forgot
in the sun
that,
for 6 hours. Or AJ had introduced us, and that became our friendship then.
Yeah.
I also got an amazing private client who's a partner of yours. I'm not going to name their name right now, but I've gigged at their house now for two
that's
amazing
awesome
parties.
I remember that flyer. I remember we had this flyer that
cool
said,
stuff.
What does gelato
have
to
do
with
pork?
Who the fuck cares?
Gelato and pork. People got really offended.
Really, that was like a whole hysteria,
well, so
even with my dad.
Of Jewish heritage, I'm far from kosher, as anyone who
knows.
Yeah,
we're very...
Well, it's Passover today, my dear.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, in honor of that, the pork and the dairy, what a winning combination. 100%
in the name of Passover.
You know?
So, Alex, so let's go back a little bit before the fridge. So you are from New York, is that right?
I was born in Harlem in 1971.
All right.
I heard somewhere
that you got inspired where you were walking in Soho. I have this whole romantic vision in my head. You
it's
know, you're walking
true.
Around and you're seeing, you know, Jean-Michel Basquiat stuff and Herring and
I met Herring.
Warhol. Okay, I want to hear this.
Yep. So when I was 10 years old already in 81, the red trains in New York, the famous trains that had all the graffiti in the movie Wild Style, I'm forgetting her name, a famous documentary photographer has documented these as well. Charlie Ahern has made films. I was there. I got to ride the trains. And what you're talking about was sometime we would visit New York, my parents and I. I did grow up in Maryland, but they were from New York as well. And we would stay in New York at least twice a year, summer and Christmas. And I was allowed to ride the trains, you know, just the Broadway, 456 downtown.
Back in the day when you could kind of do that.
I mean, yes and no, dude. Times Square was still Times Square.
Yeah, I guess that's that was much sketchier actually then than today.
But I was allowed to do it. I think they just needed mommy daddy time or whatever. So I would go to where I would go would be to Prince Street. And I would actually go to the Bowery. They wasn't supposed to. But I found out from Soho that that's where all the other studios were. And so this went on all my life, really, from age 10 to 15, 16. Every year, twice a year, I would do this. And I can't tell you how many artists I met.
What a fucking place to do it,
and
man.
And you could just walk in. When if it the doors was in that open, moment in walk time. In, they could be shooting up.
Yeah.
In fact, they might have been. Yeah. But I just didn't know nothing about nothing. I was a little kid. But I had to get. Dude, I had sketchbooks. I had black books.
You still have those?
We'll see.
You still have those books?
No comments.
Oh, frick.
I'll let you know when the auction occurs. It'll be posthumous, I'm sure.
It's evidence right now somewhere.
How did you end up in D.C.?
I did grow up in Rockville. So we went to New York a lot, and I was from there. I grew up in Rockville, Maryland. Wooten High School, class of 89. Shout out to the Patriots. I'm serious. It was an amazing place. We were named USA Today's number one high school in America that year.
Huh.
And I believe it because we had Dr. James Coles, an older gentleman, African-American descent. I would say at that time my school was 95% Caucasian, to be honest.
Huh.
There was quite a few Asian folks, South Asian, and a few African-American folks and a few Latinos, but maybe not 95%, but a good 9 out of 10 was, you know, we're white met bread. And that's okay, but we didn't feel that way. Our mascot was this guy, Bill. He was a black patriot. He was everyone's best friend. It wasn't that it was an issue. In fact, it was a non-issue, I think, for us.
Especially
obviously.
As little kids.
Dr. Coles not only knew the 2,000 kids' names, he knew our parents' names. Stuff like that. I mean, this just doesn't happen today.
No, that's old school stuff.
I was failing in a couple classes. All the teachers got together to figure out how to improve my life, and that meant me going into honors English from regular English, from being allowed to not do algebra and do consumer math my senior year to keep my grades up. I was an apprentice to the photography department, meaning I actually bartered a deal with Mrs. Thorne. She liked to paint her paintings. Yeah, she's still around. she liked to paint her paintings, so I traded a deal. I knew she didn't have a lunch class, so I made her a deal. I'll teach your photography 1A class. I'll sign up for it for no credit my senior year. In exchange, I'm also already your teaching assistant. Let me have your lunch period when you don't have nothing to do. It's a period and a half because it's a big school, so that meant I had 90 minutes in the middle of every day my senior year to do whatever I wanted. And I had full access to the photo dark room and the print shop and a ceramic studio. And we had all of those things. And I took full advantage of them.
That's
and
awesome.
Made an incredible amount of stuff. I also created the first animal rights group officiated by any high school in America called SOAR, Student Organization for Animal Rights. While I was employed at PETA, the actual headquarters was in Rockville starting at 15. So I helped organize Rock Against Fur, the first ones, with River Phoenix and all them, and B-52s.
Huh.
I was 16 around that time.
So you vegetarian?
I'm not anymore.
Okay.
But I was at the time. I was recruited to do things that I didn't agree with, and I left the organization. I was groomed, I guess you would say, and I decided that wasn't for me. I also wanted to get into college, so I quit that job. Going back to my high school, I knew I wanted to go to Parsons School of Design. I had an older friend, Jennifer Wall, who had graduated a couple years before me and would come back and see me at school and be like, this is where you're going. This is where you need to be. And growing up, as I did with exposure to New York, I had a subscription to Andy Warhol's Interview magazine that my mom had gotten me from 1984 through 89. I had them all. And I collaged everything, and I had Michael Musto's columns into a scrapbook, so I had a literal scrapbook of every single venue and club in New York mapped out with a hand-drawn map. So when I went to high school, college for the summer, 16 going on 17, I lived at 31 Union Square West. 33 Union Square West was a McDonald's at the time, but I knew it was Andy Warhol's Silver Factory because I was that kid. I could see the back of it from my dorm room. lost my virginity the first day there to a Korean goth. I said, I know how to ride the subway. Let's go. After we fucked for the first time, I'm sure it was awful for her.
But great for you, man.
No, I'm finishing. Let me tell you what happened. This is the dorm room. She and I were the only two that got there 3 days early because we were allowed to. No one else showed up till the day of class or whatever, but we were allowed to get there 3 days early, so I fucking, of course I did. And so did she. So we're the only two people on like four floors of this ancient dormitory that had loft beds for six people in each room. Just insane. So, and the windows were 12 feet tall that opened. It was a wild place. Anyways, so the first day, the first afternoon, she and I are the only two in the entire like three floors. Somehow we see each other. We fuck. I'm like, hey, I know how to ride the subway. I've been riding since I was 10 years old. So we get on at Union Square, which is the major, major station. At that time, the seediest, is the second seediest after Times Square. It's completely dangerous and completely just filthy. And I wanted us to go to Central Park. So I thought, okay, let's get on the express going uptown. I knew this. And we'll get out at, 72nd or whatever it goes to, 82nd, 84th. So, I sound like a no. So we hop on the train. I'm like, oh, shit, this is the wrong train. And I'm like, come on. And I hop back off, but she didn't, and the doors closed.
Dude.
I'm not joking.
Dang.
The fucking doors
you
closed.
Abandoned the girl.
On the express train uptown.
And she had never been on.
Never been to New York.
The
from
worst.
Iowa.
After
from
fucking
Iowa.
Her,
oh,
by
yeah.
the way.
Dang. Oh, did I?
Use her and dispose her.
Did I?
What
Me
the
too.
Fuck?
What do I do? This is, girls, boys and girls, this is 1986.
Before there it was a fucking hashtag. Hashtag
cell phones?
Was what you smoke.
How about cell phones? How about
right.
pagers?
Right. She was done. She was
like,
well,
dude, there
was
is
actually,
nothing like the old okay. school process of learning and
so,
doing something.
Do you want to hear how it went?
100%.
So there's a little more. Not much. A little. I do recall very frantically trying to figure out what to do. I do recall getting on the next express train and running around the next stop. I do recall then getting back on the next express train, back down and running around Union Square and then going, oh my God, and running around, I don't know for how long. And I guess I lost track and just decided to go out for the afternoon for having forgotten about it. So when I get back home, all five of my roommates who hadn't been there earlier that day were now there and stuck to the wall of the room with a giant hunting knife. Remember, this girl was from Iowa. She brought with her a giant hunting knife. Stabbed into the wall was a note that said, Alex, this is for you to bisect your balls with.
Damn. What?
She proceeded to fuck every one of those roommates. So you're welcome, boys. You're welcome, boys.
What a
that's
fucking,
all I got to say.
What
you're
a
welcome,
fucking
boys.
First experience,
I'm saying,
man. That's like...
A very
that's
fucking
the,
first experience.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah, the first
I have
fucking
never,
fucking
ever,
experience.
ever told that story to anyone.
I'm going to use that somewhere
I
sometime.
I mean, copyright
if you don't
right here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I hope you still have your balls intact. I'm just
absolutely.
Saying.
They're still here.
There was no castration.
Not a problem.
Losing your virginity.
No, but was legend born? Do you think legend was born? Do you think? Do you
totally.
Think? I mean, I banged my way through the next 6 weeks of that dorm, man. But no, I didn't really. But actually, she was the only girl I slept with for 2 years. But I fell in love with a girl that summer who became my first love. And I commuted to see her three or four times during our senior year. Of high school, she was in Manhattan. She lived there, and I lived in Rockville. So we had this long distance thing. She did come once to stay with me in Rockville, even and I remember that. And maybe I only visited her twice, but it seemed like a lot more.
First love.
And then I moved to New York, or I was on my way, and I was like, "Oh, I'm arriving today." She goes, "Oh, I'm moving to Ohio. I got into Oberlin. I'm going to Ohio." I was like, what? I was shattered, dude.
The first.
Completely destroyed.
My whole life is like
marked. But then I got to New York and I forgot about it quickly. Having met the summer before all the club kids. So the part I didn't tell about that summer, I had a fake driver's license that me and my friends had made that was legit.
Oh, yeah.
License.
I had
I mean,
amazing
straight up.
Fake driver's license.
So what I had known from Michael Musto's column was the tunnel was the place to go. This is 1987, actually, not 86. No, 80, summer of 88, probably.
So Tanner was a graffiti town? Is it?
I was more into going out to the clubs at night in my class in the day, and I studied graphic design, and I got an A. I didn't know about graffiti as much at that time. Okay. I wasn't into it. As a little kid, I was. And then I kind of forgot about it.
Okay.
I can tell more about that. But this was about going out and seeing clubs and music and people that became known as club kids later. So I met RuPaul his first time
He ever. Was RuPaul. I met him in Atlanta where he was out of and in the clubs back in the
Larry
same
T,
days.
Do you remember Larry T?
Larry T,
T was his DJ that produced his first song. So I became friends with Larry. Larry had a thing for me.
There is you know what's so funny? There is a place in Atlanta called The Back Door, and it was a hardcore gay club.
See?
My friend John and I, one night after X-ing and Raven and going to clubs, we got into the back. Sure. We went into the back door of it, and there was a super, super hot, like almost kind of looking like a RuPaul blonde-headed girl, and we were sitting there getting fucked up.
Right.
And she pointed over to me and saying, asking me, what's my name?
Right.
And so John and I were like, oh, fuck. The gal's going to ask me my name. And it was for the guy that she was with that was trying to pick me up in the club.
That did happen a lot. Yeah,
never but RuPaul was there that night,
Sure. So I knew Paul as I knew him, even as a friend. Photographed him out of drag even back then. But so I knew these people a little bit as friends. I got a job working for a guy called Michael Alleg, who ended up being the so-called party monster. Macaulay Culkin played him in a movie. Michael Alleg is now out of prison after 20 years for murdering someone.
Damn.
I left That's New York before story. He got there. Yeah. I left before New York before he did this murder. But I didn't really know him. But my point is I was in there with these club kids. So when I left that summer, I knew them all. So when I came back as a freshman in 1989, they were actually the door people for all the hottest clubs in New York at that time. The drag queens, even for the straight clubs, the mixed clubs, the drag queen would be
the whole subculture, no?
Would be the door person. Kenny is the legendary one. So I knew Kenny as well. And so here I was, 18 years old, freshman at Parsons. They would have people 200, 300 deep with money flashing. And I'd be like, Kenny.
Dude, that's like fucking Mac Daddy right there.
Just
as far as to walk into like a school
we were
as a freshman.
We were
but I mean, just like your friends, to hook up your friends.
Three or four of us, I would just be like, come on, and we'd grab each other's hands and just walk through the
access.
Crowd. And they'd hand us drink tickets, weed, whatever. Drugs were everywhere. I didn't fuck with them, and I'm not lying. Like, I just didn't care. I was just into the weed. That changed later for a lot of people that I knew when I graduated from Parsons on time, thank you, with a 4.0, thank you. In my Bachelor's of Fine Arts with graphic design, there was only 16 other boys and girls that graduated with me. We started out as 90, Parsons being a very small school anyway.
Manhattan will weed your ass out probably quick.
Well, they were fucked up. They were all in trust funds.
Right.
They all had money. I didn't know this. I mean, I grew up upper middle class, but definitely not a trust fund kid at all.
Fragile.
They just had the money. They had money and access, and drugs are, you know, they sell themselves. So I think I lost a lot of friends in that sense. I have one that I later got back in touch with. I remember, that's all I'll say about this situation, was my last roommate situation in New York was Lower East Side, where, like, fucking Hotel on Rivington is now, close by to there. In fact, I got to see this apartment just recently. I lived at 159 Stanton, apartment 1A. And it was a two-room apartment with a spiral staircase. So I had the upstairs room, and my roommate had the downstairs. From the downstairs, you went back up, and we had a giant fenced-in backyard with a giant chestnut tree. Private yard.
In Manhattan.
Still there. The yard is still there. The yard is still there. But at that time, what isn't still there was a community farm. And what I say by that is a Dominican community farm. It's a Dominican neighborhood exclusively, other than us. In that building, we were the only Caucasians living in the building at the time. We had inherited the building from other rock bands. So many bands that are very, very famous now, many of whose lead singers are dead, lived in that apartment. And I could definitely name the bands, then you would know them. But I had inherited a room in that apartment. Really was naive. I had lost touch with this friend for years. And then finally, my senior year, I ended up back in this apartment. One day I came home, his arm was swollen up like Popeye. Like swollen up like a cartoon. And I was like, what the f-? I didn't know what that even was. I took him to the hospital, got on the phone. I said, Mrs. So-and-so, sorry to bother you there in Arlington, Texas during your dinner, but you might want to hop on a plane up here to JFK and check on your boy because he's about to die.
That's
you know,
hardcore, man.
He's about to die. He was overdosed on drugs or had some kind of dirt in his drugs and intravenous drug user and all that. And so then I came home from the hospital after taking them, and I opened my drawer, and there was, like, needles and stuff in there. I had never even seen one. I'm not even lying. Like, I was so shocked. So I hightailed it out of there. I was out of that apartment before he got home from the hospital. I thought I would never see that person again for obvious reasons. I moved into a woman's closet for the next 2 months after that to graduate college. Damn. I had a giant pit bull. I had to call my dad and say, by the way, Dad, I have a dog. And by the way, could you come pick him up, please? And bring him to Rockville for me. I'll be back soon enough.
Sounds like your parents were and are supportive.
They're dead now, but they were extremely supportive. In fact, leading to my opening the fridge. That's through their legacy that I was able to do that. And why I did it. But now my dad came up. Didn't even know I had a dog, let alone a pit bull in fucking Manhattan. And this is the early 90s, a pit bull. I'm talking, this thing was a machine. And he was extremely dangerous. Extremely dangerous. So for my to have handed him to my dad, I don't know what I was thinking. I guess I wasn't. I had no choice.
You were young.
So my dad saved the dog. I had saved the dog from another person who I knew was having similar problems as that roommate. I had rescued a dog that was my boy. You know, 2 years earlier, that became my dog. So that was my dog. Saved my ass in numerous situations, including a break-in in that home where two men were breaking in with a gun. The dog near about bit a guy's foot off. Not joking. So
Damn. This
was a life of New York. I got stabbed twice, shot at more than once, once while tripping on LSD. I had post-traumatic stress disorder, I think, I may still.
Oh, yeah. That.
I mean, this was 25 years ago. But I'm a big proponent of no guns. So I'm really pleased to talk about some stuff today that's a little more positive.
Man, there's like a wealth of stories
that's
with you,
just
man. That
scratching
actually,
the surface.
Yeah, yeah. It's like we should have like Alex once a month.
Well, I want to have my own
like
podcast.
Alex Chapter One.
Like, I've been talking about doing my own.
Talk to Jack, man. Jack, you need to get this motherfucker.
Yeah,
on here,
I've been wanting to do my own podcast. I just don't know where how to do it.
Well, here it is.
So so then let's fast forward to 2009,
please.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then you open the fridge.
Yeah.
And the fridge, it's a gallery that focuses on street art. So tell me a little bit about, like, the mission is to try to represent emerging artists that are not so well known and make art accessible to everyone. Is that what it is?
So much so, yeah.
Okay.
And it could be street artists, meaning people who put up art in public, whether they mean to or not. Those could be taggers, vandals, outsider artists, homeless people, rich people, could be anybody. But what I mean by making the arts accessible to everyone is also the painting on the walls. So people don't even need to go into a gallery to see the work. If they have eyeballs, they're going to see it. And it's
because
jars.
We got to tell people. So the gallery has murals outside where
all around.
You have graffiti art.
And you just
and
got it repainted
we
recently,
it all
right?
The time.
By
we did.
By Dabs or by not for honor of Dabs.
So we do tribute walls a lot. I'll talk a little bit about Dabs and what that means. It was painted just before that as a going away tribute for an artist who goes by the name of Daft. He is in prison right now for marijuana. And
where? But
Jessup, Maryland.
In Maryland, but that. That's interesting. That's like DC's changed, but Maryland's pretty open, progressive.
Depends on the scale, doesn't it?
Right, there you go.
The scale was busted on
how
this
much
one.
Weight.
Yeah, and it was a lot. So anyways, we just went had a little going away party for him, and so that wall was painted for him while he was there. We were all skating, you know, smoking out and painting the wall. Dabs was a friend we lost a few years ago to a condition called depression, and that plus the presence of Xanax and shatter or resin, also known as Dabs, ironically, plus access to a firearm is a known medical condition that's being diagnosed now by medical professionals. I learned this from a young man's father, a young man named Intrepid. That's all I'm going to say about his name.
Hey, what? So when you take a Xanax and then smoke...
I've never taken one except when prescribed to.
Right, but what's supposed, I mean...
So the condition that occurs is a haze, it's a fog, and it's a depression that is already in existence. So what I'm saying is it exists with severe depression. The condition exists when these things are present, from what I understand. And this was told to me by the father of a young man who had also just taken his life. This man came to my gallery unannounced, introduced himself to me, and said he was giving the money from... the funeral of his son to me, because the only thing his son liked was graffiti, and he enjoyed coming to my gallery. And I was blown away. I'm not going to cry now, hopefully, but I certainly did. And I said, I'm not a nonprofit. He goes, you don't have to be a nonprofit to take a gift. So yeah. They've donated about $300. They've used it to do a couple workshops in his and Dab's name. So we did some on Dab's Day. And that was what I said to him I would do with it. So, but the point being is that he made me aware of this condition that I then later learned while retelling this story to adapt. He said, that's what Dabs had. That's what Berkeley had. The same shit. So the conditions, again, are pre-existing severe depression of some sort, not bipolarism, severe depression, mm-hmm. Or it could be bipolarism, I suppose. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But some kind of severe depression, plus the existence of the presence of Xanax pills and shatter or resin, which is a specific type of marijuana extraction that's extremely concentrated.
It's like 90% THC,
certainly 50 or higher. Yeah. And it's often consumed with a hot torch and in a very concentrated amount that makes you extremely inebriated immediately to full level of capacity or incapacity, as the case may be. And that plus a gun. So that's put those all together, you know.
If you only just stuck with the shatter, you know.
I mean, there's a lot of ifs, dude. What I'm just trying to make people aware of is that this is something.
Yeah.
And if you know anyone that has these things available to them, particularly a gun, to be honest, do something about it.
Yeah.
Don't just ignore it. Don't just pretend like there's nothing going on.
100%.
Yeah. If there's a gun around, there's just that's a flag right
fucking there. Action,
why do you need a gun?
Exactly.
Who are you?
All it does, all it does is just open up that option.
Who are you? Why do you need a gun?
Yeah.
What is this?
There's no words.
What a subject at this moment right now.
Where are we right now? Are we in a favela? No, we're not.
Yeah.
Right. Are we? Then get me two.
Yeah.
If I am, you better give me two. One for each hand.
Yeah.
Okay? And a backup for that.
Yeah.
Of course. You better. The favelas, the gangsters are running the schools and the hospitals, by the way.
Yeah.
So they ain't all bad people either.
Yeah.
So, you know, really look at reality for what it is. What is the gun for?
Statistics show that, if you have
what
guns,
is the gun for? Is it going to hurt you or someone you
love?
Know,
and you know, there's that subject, no way around like it. That subject and the same thing with religion, same thing now with really politics. You can't even get the people to come to a table and actually have an honest discussion because everybody's in their camps.
Well,
and it's like they're fighting.
And that's what Instagram and other social media has made enabled. It's your navel gazing. Your algorithms are you're looking back, you're jacking off yourself.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, it flattens it out, and it goes zero and one, kind of like a digital communication.
You only get exposed to the things you want to be exposed to, and then they start to feed you more and more to keep you there.
And then you end up with your own prejudice, like hardcore prejudice.
Well, it seems
prejudice.
Like this thing, this
could,
internet.
Or just the appearance that it's more acceptable than it is. The reinforcement of your own
beliefs
or your own questioning, you see, and that's where the danger is. There's no questioning anymore.
No, there's no dialogue and questioning and open discussion about these.
No, the algorithms will feed you in a certain direction.
And
what we now know,
we
is
follow
there are people buying those algorithms and influencing.
Oh yeah,
us, okay?
yeah. And the thing, but
so
beyond
we're
that,
tools. You
but
become a tool.
We become a tool.
Late, you don't
right.
You know.
But the thing is, the way that the algorithms behave then translate to the way that we behave.
Well, they force it upon you. It's social engineering at its finest. Now
they
I
force it upon you, but there is a certain
no
duty of
Google
the individual
now.
To get your
I
fucking.
I don't believe you have a choice. I think you're in it. You're in it, or you're
well,
not.
Well, we are in it, but there's degrees of being aware.
I mean, I don't read
it.
Facebook. I don't read news. In fact, since the Tangerine Tyrant or the Cheeto Bonito or whatever came to power, I literally have opted out. I'm in a bubble.
Yeah.
In this cloud.
But then,
in a bubble.
But then again, we were saying if you see somebody with a gun, do something. If you see the orange
life.
Cheeto in
right.
power, do something.
No,
so we can't
no,
also
different.
Be in a bubble.
I spray it. I don't say it with that one.
I agree
me.
With that. I think it's important to be informed, but if you tune in.
My blood pressure went way too high.
The fucking madness that is there will be given to you.
So things definitely creep in. You know, my homie Decoy, make sure I know some of the news. Obviously things like tragedies creep in, and I'm aware of them and I will study them further. One particular tragedy I'm talking about is Alonzo Smith, recently gunned down by the DC police. MPD murdered him in cold blood. MPD murdered this man in cold blood.
Tell me about it. So what happened?
Alonzo Smith, two officers were never charged. They shot him from the car. Didn't even get out of the car. So he was riding a motorcycle. It was a bachelor party. He might have been a little crunked up, whatever. The police had been given a no-chase order specifically. They chased. They followed this man for 4 hours around the city, listening for his motorcycle. cornered him at the tunnel on 3rd Street, Rhode Island, or excuse me, M Street, New York Avenue, 3rd Street Tunnel. Tell me there aren't cameras there. Shot him from the car. Well, actually caused him to smash into the car. Then as he stood up and walked away, they shot him in the back. And he was murdered in cold blood.
And did anything happen to
the charges, no
nothing.
Camera, no video footage?
The footage was denied by the Department of Homeland Security, whose headquarters is right there, and I believe has HD footage, in fact. Not only that, there's gunshot detectors, so the cameras would have been focused on that area immediately. There's been very, very little talked about.
And now we have a president saying that, you know, roughing up to the police officers.
So this just happened in our city right here, our 6 square miles that we're in. And I don't think anyone knows about it.
That's
more up to date, you know, with the guns and all. Now, just yesterday, I had a friend who had a neighbor shot. Just last week, I had a friend whose gym buddy was shot. And these are people who I needed to work at the gallery doing security, and neither of them were available because people they knew were just murdered.
You know, so just a question as far as like all the kind of, with this being such a hot topic
the city's coming to summer.
The right to bear arms.
So we're here in the most gorgeous hotel in what used to be an extremely violent neighborhood. I remember this building was a church that served the poorest people in this neighborhood for 40 to 50 years before it is what it is now, where we are sitting. Poor people would be fed and clothed. Neonatal services were given. Free legal services were given. And, of course, religious counseling. And things change over time. That's how it is.
Well, talk about graffiti, right? I mean, isn't like you end up, you start as a graffiti artist, and then these developers buy these places, and then they hire you to paint murals.
Hopefully. In fact, this is one of those buildings, because I was wandering around smoking a J before an interview here in the outside alleys, remembering how I used to spray paint all these buildings in the back. I noticed that there was a mural in the lobby downstairs by what looks like a sort of an office space area for the clients. And in that sort of vestibule, I noticed an artist group called No Kings Collective. Shout out to No Kings, Peter and Brandon. They are just crushing it, man. And if you want to talk about the commercial face of graffiti or street art or whatever, I would say No Kings is the best example of a local group that is working with employees who are local artists, including Edwin Marino, my former mentee, Che, city's also most wanted graffiti artist, you know, now legitimately making a wonderful living, creating murals for people all over the city. And that is my personal pride and joy, because I've worked with him since he was dropped out of high school. And I always had a plan for him. I said to him 10 years ago, one day you're going to make a living painting murals, dude. I promise you. And here he is.
You know, we got the container. We got the shipping container over at the Hirshhorn that I was talking to the Hirshhorn folks
Kelly
yesterday. Kelly painted it. But what they're going to do is they're going to start repainting it every year. And I'll connect you with those guys.
And No Kings Collective
are going to be doing something at the Hirshhorn with them.
I want to hear more about this, but we got to take a short break. We got to take a little short break.
Perfect.
And we'll be right back with Alex Galston.
Thank you.
Original music by Flash Frequency today. We will be right back.
Not on mic. There we go.
Hey guys, welcome back. You're listening to the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Line Hotel.
I feel fully served.
And we are with our friend Alex Goldstein. He's the Fridge DC art director and gallery owner.
Indeed.
Yeah, so we're back, Alex. I wanted to ask you about the graffiti and street art scene in DC. Yeah. Tell me what it
is. It's burgeoning. It's flourishing.
Okay.
There are people old and young who are still spraying paint. Some are getting paid to do it. Some are paying fines to do it. So it's still around.
So it's Union Market. Ever. Is Union Market the graffiti neighborhood which, where we have our factory? Where
hey, you
we
know
make?
What? I want to hear a little bit about that if you're allowed to.
I've been advised.
And I want to get. I want to get you at the bowl and go skating with you.
I've been advised by legal counsel not to comment on Union Market at this time.
Oh man!
Damn.
Yeah, that's our hood.
That
yo.
Was the dirt that we were gonna get.
Yep. Yeah, it's
you're
okay.
You have to wait till after court, which is April 12th.
Can you still come and shred on the bowl there?
I don't know.
Get a wig.
I'll let you know after.
So there is also what is called the Wall of Fame here, right?
Yeah.
And this is an Amtrak tunnel that passes underneath the Bureau of Engraving in Southwest DC. Yeah. So that means that if you're in your house and you're thinking about doing some graffiti or you want to check it out, you get a trespass Amtrak property and you're also directly under government property. Yeah. So Alex, have you been there?
Not as far as you know.
Good answer. Ding, ding.
Oh man!
Yeah, I've been there.
So okay,
I painted there. I've been there. No, I haven't.
off the record.
No, I actually have not ever been there. I asked an artist to take me there recently, and he was like, "You've never been there." I probably have in 1987. It was the last time I painted there.
So people, like, if you want to become, you know, this well-known graffiti artist, you got to practice, right?
Yep.
And that's part of the process.
Yep. That's what the open walls are for that we created. When I say we, an artist collective called Albus Cavus that used to exist, founded by Peter Crisco, who used to be in Washington. He is not anymore. Although
He was in a studio in Union Market there.
Yeah, many of them. Yeah. As was Dan Steinhofer, the guy who built him.
He was going to build us a little cart.
Gelato cart. He was going to customize a cart for us.
He could still do it, actually.
Yeah.
But he was just here the other day. Point being, what was I saying? I don't remember.
We were talking about
practicing. The open walls.
Oh, yeah, the open walls. So years ago, we came up with this idea that other cities were doing and having an open wall, at least one in every quadrant of the city, being that the city is divided into four quadrants. So we wanted our goal was to have at least one wall where people could go paint 24/7 without fear of retribution of any kind. Meaning from other painters who they might have painted over, which is called a beef, or by property owners, or by police. And this is in existence now. We have many of them all over town. Foreman Mills has the giant wall behind the now closed shopping mall. That is every year a paint jam as well, where artists come from all over the East Coast. And it's an exciting weekend where people paint that wall. But there are areas on there which anyone can just go paint whenever they want. In Northwest, there was one that may be gone now because as the property developers are finally closing in on everything. So I'm not sure where the other ones are. I know there's one at the Bridge Spot, which is in Southeast near me. That's under construction right now due to the railroad expansion. If you didn't know, the railroad standard is changing from single-stack trains to double-stack trains. And I am a train geek, so we can talk more about trains at
because of graffiti and like painting trains.
Because of the romance of train travel as well. All I watch is
smoking hashish in India.
Well, just getting on the train and traveling across the country.
I'm
like carpetbaggers.
Train routes in India, particularly, they still use some trains that are coal driven that were built by the English Empire specifically for use on rails that only exist there.
Darjeeling, what is that movie that is adorable?
They go into that a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the mountain ones. But there's actually a thing on YouTube. You can watch cab views of trains. And if you want to see really cool graffiti, you can watch England, for example. You can watch London to Brixton, you know, from King's Cross to Brixton and see all the current, you know, graffiti live today, right now, as the train runs.
Wow.
Super cool.
Wow.
If you're a super dork, you can do what's called benching, and you can follow benches. So let's say I painted a freight car in Florida It's a Tropicana car, number 318. And I know, I checked the benches, where's Tropicana 318 last spotted? Now it's in Arizona. Now it's in Oaxaca, Mexico. Now it's in Toronto, Canada.
And just see how it gets, like, now it's that in work evolves.
South Asia. You know, because someone out there is benching, tracking, this is Tropicana 318. And I can type that into a website and find out where my car is right now. Where's my graffiti?
That's awesome.
And possibly find a picture of it to see if it's still running or not.
So or who painted over it. So there is a dialogue going on with
it's
graffiti,
It's an incredible
right?
thing. It's an archaeology. It is a complete living language, complete dialogue.
And artists are talking to each other and we don't even realize, our spectators.
Absolutely.
As spectators.
They're talking to each other and to you if you're aware of it or not, even if you're not aware of it. And the point being is we're bombarded with how many millions of images a day now with the phones, billions of images of advertising that we're not aware of or even...
I'm gonna
is now another part of that tapestry, you see. And the way the graffiti was in the 60s to get your name as clearly read as possible, that was the goal.
Right.
Now it's the opposite.
Now
how
you
hard
have
can
Instagram
make it to read,
and,
you know?
Yeah, now you have but, like the
well, people,
one anonymous.
People are dry snitching themselves with the legal graffiti that they're posting on the internet, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So I love the ability of graffiti to comment on whatever social political moment,
yeah.
whatever
agree.
Is happening, right?
Yeah, good one. It's running right now in New York with Banksy and Borf.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's about
Borf.
An artist who...
So Borf
from Turkey,
here.
Right? That got jailed?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Borf was my gallery artist. I had showed his first ever solo show. I got an email from Banksy's gallery that day. He showed at Banksy's gallery a year to the day after and has been showing with Banksy's gallery and every year since. This was about 10 years ago, 8 years ago. Before that, Borf did a solo show or a group show called Consolation of Ruin at an abandoned house on North Capitol. Banksy, unbeknownst to America, was here and helped him create that exhibit. I'm revealing that for the first time right now. He was there, and
pretty
helped. He helped make the show.
And did you meet Banksy?
No comment. But what I can say is,
the dirt.
I don't have any dirt.
No.
But what I can tell you is that they're still working together, and they just worked on a wall on Houston Street, the main wall that's known for murals now, sponsored by Jessica Goldfarb.
Is that the one that Os Gemelos did? From
Os Gemelos. It was redone as a Keith Haring Crack as Whack wall recently. Yeah. That was probably the most notable one. Someone repainted that, but Os Gemelos, anyone, Ron English has done it. It's maintained by Jessica Goldman. She also does Wynwood Walls. So shout out to her. I don't know her, but I'm a big fan of her patronage. She's quite a visual or visible supporter of the spray paint arts right. in particular. And that's what I refer to it as now. It's not graffiti. It's not street art. It's spray paint art, if we're being honest. It could be other techniques, but most people are responding to spray paint. Whether it's legal or illegal, it's spray paint.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the common denominator.
Do you say, with now the graffiti artists somewhat being mm-hmm. integrated into the galleries, into the developers?
Yeah.
Do you see that as a good thing?
It is for some and right. not for others.
Which is kind of the way it always is, right?
It is. How can it be bad? I mean, money, we're here to make money, right? I mean, if we're not doing it illegally, we're here to make money.
Yeah, so we can continue to do what we like to do.
Whatever
right?
we want to do. And hopefully it's not illegal activity. I mean, hopefully people grow up and have other opportunities and other ways to spend their time. But
I'm
50 years old and I still fucking do it.
Yeah,
so,
I
you
agree.
Know.
There, you know, and for better and for worse, it's like there's always this thing now that's what happened with what's happened with cannabis, you know.
Uh-huh.
Is there's always the nostalgia for when it was
it
illegal
be, yes.
because it was a natural filter. If
buying weed
really
on the corner, fuck that.
Weed.
I don't need to buy weed on the corner no more.
Well,
I'd rather have someone deliver a briefcase with samples.
I know. It's like, I think it's both good and bad.
No,
right?
I know.
It's
I know.
Good
I'm
because
joking.
You don't get locked up and you lose your freedom, which sucks.
Although I will tell you, when I was just locked up for graffiti last week for 10 hours in the D.C. jail being processed through court, the
so
guy
you
next
don't get
to me,
a fine? You actually get locked up for doing
I was
things? Tell me.
Pre-trial. I was arrested on a warrant, and now I have a trial, as I just mentioned. No comment on that. But what I'm saying is I spent 10 hours in D.C. jail, and the guy next to me, and the final step before I saw the judge and got out for the day, said he was in there for selling 2 dime bags of weed. So who knows? What I do know is this. You're given a prisoner number when you arrive. That day. That is the batch of prisoners that will see the judge before, before 1 p.m. For me, it was 2:30 when I got out of there. Starting at 1 p.m., excuse me. So you have to be processed in by 10 a.m. in order to see the judge that day. Otherwise, you're there overnight. So I turned myself in at 6 a.m. And again, was out by 2:30 p.m. But at one point during all the transfers that I underwent, which included two vehicle rides and no fewer than five different cells, various handcuffs of plastic, ankle cuffs that were metal, ankle cuffs, handcuffs that were shackled to my chest, being shackled to other men. And this was all just to get to see the judge for a misdemeanor destruction of property charge. This is what I went through. It's the same thing you go through if you stab someone. It's the same thing you go through if you drink drove.
Same thing you go through if you peed.
Same thing you went through if you sold two dime bags and were arrested by undercover police, apparently, because that's what the guy next to me said happened to him. But what I can tell you is this. I was prisoner number 76 of 84 because at one time we were all in the room together. The room is the size of, let's say, an empty school bus. And along one wall is a bunch of windows, cafeteria style, with a stool and a metal screen. And behind that is public defenders. And they call your prisoner number and you see them one by one as they call you. And then they process that. And then like 4 hours later, you're in front of the judge. So that was the time I was with everybody that was being processed in this batch. And I looked at the 84 people in the room. I counted four Hispanics and me.
And the rest were black.
What do you think? Lucky guess.
Yeah.
Racial profiling.
Literally the only Caucasian in the room. I guess one Hispanic guy, one African American guy could have been.
So we had this comment with guns, right?
There was real no
question. Another subject that is in the news and everything.
But
nobody's having intelligent, deep, complex conversations about something.
I saw myself in the D.C. jail that afternoon, and I'm guessing that I was not the only white person that had committed a crime.
Well, didn't the study here in D.C.
or his accused admitting? I'm not admitting guilt.
The African Americans are 8 to 9 times more likely to get arrested for smoking weed.
Figure out the percentage here on this ratio. There was 84 men, and I'm the only one that was white.
Yeah.
So that percentage is a lot higher than that.
Yeah,
99.5, dude. Come on, let's be real. You got to be black to get arrested in this town. Pretty much is what I'm saying. The Hispanic didn't want to deal with the language barrier. They let them
go. People don't want to talk about it and try to get down to the roots of
it. Who knows why it is? I mean, D.C. is not 99.5% black, and they are not the only people committing crime. I promise you that.
Yeah. Well, they say as far as cannabis, you know, it's like roughly the white and the black smoke about the same percentage.
I mean,
but you get 9 times to 10 times more of blacks getting locked up than the whites.
My contention is not just cannabis crimes, every crime.
Yeah.
Every crime.
Yeah.
Racial profiling.
Well, racial profile, but it's like the kind of institutionalism of racism that's been here for hundreds of years. It's like fat and meat. It's here and it's everywhere.
And I can say this as a cold-hearted observation. It's like college for some people. And what I mean by that is they were trading tips and tricks by the last cell to the younger men from the older men. And here's how you handled this. And here's this judge's thing. And here's where you want to go with these papers. If you do this certificate, you get these hours off. Here's how you avoid this piss test. Here's how you do this. And they were just trading info to the younger guys about how to stay in the system.
Well, how to be a better criminal.
How to stay in the system or how to get this. And I mean, I understand that they are looking out for each other. And I do understand that culture is in existence. But it saddened me that was where the level is. And that they're not by choice. I mean, they're doing this because they have to.
They have to survive.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm not saying I know what these people committed. I don't approve of violence in any circumstance, but you know, other types of crimes, I'm like, shit's hard out there, though. They need a loaf of bread, right? I mean, I ain't mad at them.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So that's just me. I don't, you know. Anyway, I'm not encouraging anarchy.
No, not encouraging. But at the same time, to be able to judge without ever having been in those shoes for some time.
If you're poor, I can tell you this: when I was down and out. And feeling down on myself. There was a few times I enjoyed a free meal from a Whole Foods on P Street.
Before I left
the building, I had gulped down a couple pounds of hot food, no problem.
Rob knows about that.
Yep.
I'm a master.
Yeah, man.
I taught my kids how to take nuts.
No comment there. Anyways,
no comment. Yep. I've never
You didn't do that.
That was somebody else.
You own a small business.
I don't think that's a felony, my friends.
I didn't do anything.
All right.
Move along.
So was there any other topics I know I can like ramble on?
So, you know, I got a question. I don't know if you have any comments on it, but with it being art, we're undergoing right now in the human species a radical fundamental transformation
with our relationship to reality, who we are, and it has to do with technology that's now showed up kind of on the scene 10 years ago, you can say, with the World Wide Web kind of coming online, whatever, like 98, 99, but now the smart devices. How do you see, if you do see, virtual reality's impact on the world of art?
I think eyesight is getting worse. I think people are very myopic in their eyesight. And a virtual reality, I remember when I was a little kid, they told us don't sit too close to the TV.
Yeah.
Now you're strapping a phone millimeters from your eyeballs.
Well, and which will be 15 years from now.
I ain't going to do it.
Will be an implant behind your eyelid.
Ain't going to do it.
Will be the screen.
Not going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Maybe not you, but our grandkids.
Well.
Not mine. Probably will. I mean, maybe. Yeah. I'm not interested. Yeah. I mean, I don't give a shit what people
do. Well, you, me, Bieletta, you know.
I have no idea.
We're the last.
I think it's
going to
make them worse drivers.
We're the last analog.
So hopefully we'll have
generation.
Robot drivers soon, and we won't have to worry about people like my friend who got killed on Florida Avenue last week. Because I think that's what's going to happen. People are going to be driving with those fucking things on. That's what I think is going to happen.
Well,
if they ain't already watching porn, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what drives the whole industry anyway.
Well,
so if you want to get real,
then there's an argument
what
for
I think
driving, robot drivers, right?
Perfect.
So then you can sit
robot
there and watch porn as you're going down
Do
New
it.
York Avenue.
They're
and
doing it anyway.
You're not going to run into somebody else.
Hopefully not.
Porn.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that if you're really real about this technology, that's what it comes down to. I don't think there's any way to look at it other than that. And I think the bandwidth that we have available to us, the hard drive space that we demand, the currency is porn. And, you know, that's what's trading at the highest dollar value.
Yeah, well, that's who's the one that's pouring all the money into the virtual reality. Right?
And
I'm
it
sure.
sucks
and
because
it
objectify women. And it's
violent.
Women
and men.
And that's not good sex, people. That's
I'm
not if you're a
for
woman.
It. I'm not promoting it at
woman,
all. I'm sad about
don't
it.
Don't think that you need to
I
act like a porn
you being,
star
yeah.
if you're
well,
a teenager out there. Because
to
that's
tell you this
not
much,
what your men should do to you.
As a 50-year-old, I've never once sent a dick pic, never received a female's nude pic. Ever once.
Yeah.
Ever once.
Yeah, me neither.
Ever.
Yeah.
And I date women, like normal nice women, and like we have sex and stuff, but I
How
mean nobody's
times
doing this. It just doesn't exist. Like
different right now.
That?
Yeah.
I'm not sending you my what the hell?
Yeah.
I cannot even imagine.
How fucking big of a loser do you have to be?
What had
send
to take
chick
place
fucking
in order for me
dick.
To do that? I had to
that
be,
would be
real
so
fucked
weird.
Up.
Weird, yeah. Dude. Maybe that's Xanax
and I think
and that, shatter
I don't
that.
Think
I don't
so.
Know.
I think it's a thing. I think it's what people do, and a lot of them. And
well, because porn is so
maybe,
you know, pervasive.
I don't know what
well,
it
you know,
is.
Well, yeah.
But I also have never been on Tinder and like that. And I don't have a problem with people doing it. I think people are getting some out of it, some of them.
Well, you know, the thing
I
is,
don't
be
actually know
very
anyone
aware
that's
where the
it.
Dinosaurs right now that are sitting here talking.
Doubt.
So you
My
go
concerns,
50 years ago and everybody will be doing
the
that.
The thing
is
with
weird.
Me on there, everyone's going to be knowing. Like, I had a friend who's an artist in town. And she and her boyfriend broke up. She went on there. And within 5 days, I must have received a screenshot of her Tinder profile from 10 different people. Like, she's on there. I'm like, fuck if I care.
Yeah.
Mind your business. You on there, too. How'd you see it?
Yeah.
Oh, someone sent it to me. Bullshit. You was on there. Don't tell me they sent it to you. It's a different one than the other guy sent me. You know, like, it's a different picture. And I ain't you. You're lying.
At least own up to it.
Right?
Do it, right?
So you go out with her then, fool. I mean, what the fuck do I care? I don't know about this stuff. I'll be honest. I really don't. And if you can say I'm a dinosaur, I know a lot about technology. And what I mean by that is I'm an Adobe Photoshop, Adobe Creative Suite certified
graphic designer.
Trainer.
No. I'm a fucking dinosaur. I'm saying I have 1 foot analog, 1 foot digital.
No, but my
you
point is that this, that I've been doing internet. I designed the first 300 homepages for America Online. I designed the first 300 to 500 homepages.
So,
for
did you
AOL.
Get all those, like stock options and get rich and all that?
I was
from that?
What they call a freelance designer.
Well,
so, what that
on the, edge.
The stock options I got plus $2 is what's going to get me home on a Metro bus right now after this interview.
Lucky you.
Meanwhile, actually, I got to go. My bus is almost here.
Okay,
so I'm teasing.
Dude, I will lift.
We should do this again,
Alex,
man.
Thank you so much.
I love
much.
You guys.
Wow.
I'm so glad for your success.
Yeah, same to you, man.
Really. An honor to be here, and Full Service Radio, excellent facilities, excellent work.
Well, awesome. Shout out to the
Fridge DC
and my hotel, Panda
Check
Head Morgan, Panda Head.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex. Be well, brother.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio. broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.